Thank you all very much for taking part in today's program.
If you will lift this just a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you all. We're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is chapter 11, text 37. Kasmachchatena nameran mahatman Kodiyase brahmano kyadikartre Anantadevesha jagannivasa Tvamaksharam sarasattam Tvamaksharam sarasattam padam yat. O Great One, greater even than Brahma, you are the original Creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you, O Limitless One, God of gods, refuge of the universe? You are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. Purport. By this offering of obeisances, Arjuna indicates that Krishna is worshipable by everyone. He is all-pervading, and he is the soul of every soul. Arjuna is addressing Krishna as Mahatma, which means that he is the most magnanimous and unlimited. Ananta indicates that there is nothing which is not covered by the influence and energy of the Supreme Lord. And Devesha means that he is the controller of all demigods and is above them all. He is the shelter of the whole universe. Arjuna also thought that it was fitting that all the perfect living entities and powerful demigods offer their respectful obeisances unto him, because no one is greater than him. Arjuna especially mentions that Krishna is greater than Brahma, because Brahma is created by him. Brahma is born out of the lotus stem grown from the navel abdomen of Kapodakshai Vishnu, who is Krishna's plenary expansion. Therefore, Brahma and Lord Shiva, who is born of Brahma, and all other demigods, must offer their respectful obeisances. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Lord is respected by Lord Shiva and Brahma and similar other demigods. The word aksharam is very significant because this material creation is subject to destruction, but the Lord is above this material creation. He is the cause of all causes, and being so, he is superior to all the conditioned souls within this material nature, as well as the material cosmic manifestation itself. He is therefore the all-great Supreme. Om Mokihana Timidam Tasya Gyananjana Shakaya Chakshur Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitam Namano Vistam Stapitam Dina Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shapadam Tikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamadam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Shagaragatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shagaragatita Sri Vishakam Vitam Stam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute
Tatakam shanagogangi radhe vrindavaneshari prishabhanu sute devi pranvami hori priye vanchako pratagubhyascha kripasindho vyayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Kasmash Chateena Namiran Mahatma Gariyase Brahmano Pyadikartre Ananta Devesha Jagannivasa Tvam Aksharam Sadasattat Paramyat. In the previous verse, these are all prayers to the universal form of the Lord. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna requested to see Krishna's universal form, Vishwarupa. He was more interested in Krishna's personal form, but to demonstrate that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he asked Krishna, please show this wonderful form. In the future, some rascals may come and claim to be Bhagavan. So give them a standard that they have to meet. So Lord Krishna showed Arjuna this.
Don't sit like that if you can avoid it.
Yeah. So Lord Krishna showed the universal form, and Arjuna offered his prayers to the Lord. Sthane Rishikesha Tavapakirtya. Sthane Rishikesha Tavapakirtya Jagat Prahishyatya Nirvachatecha. The whole world becomes joyful by hearing your name, by hearing your glories. The demons don't like it, they scatter. But the Siddhas, the perfected souls, Siddha Sangha, perfected beings, offer you their obeisances, glorify you. Rakshamsi Bhitani Dushodravanti Sarve Namasyanti Jasiddha Sangha. So here, Kasmach Chate Namiran Mahatma. It's quite suitable that all the perfected beings should offer you their homage, because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's also suitable that the demons should be running. When the sun comes up, then everyone becomes very happy, except for the thieves and rogues. The thieves like it when the sun is down, because then they can do their business. Similarly, other creatures of the night. So it's suitable that the sun should be glorified, but in both ways, by attracting the appreciation of everyone. The Brahmins get up and chant their Gayatri Mantra and so on, and the demons slip away while the sun's up. We can't do our stealing and other such things. So it's suitable that when Krishna appears, the demons run away. When there's a strong king, then people become happy. But the thieves don't become very happy. They go find some other place. now there's a strong king in the kingdom, we have to go elsewhere. So it's suitable that Krishna should be glorified by the devas. Vishnu Bhakta Smrita Dayana Asuras Tadviparyuga. The godly persons will glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Asuras Tadviparyuga, just as there's a class of men whose occupation it is to debunk religion, debunk ideas of God, because they're demons. They don't like the idea that there should be someone in charge because it spoils the fun. While the cat's away, the mice will play. So they like the idea that there's no cat. At least they can imagine that there's no cat. But Mrityu Sarva Harascha, Krishna comes anyway as death, they can't play very long. Anyway, they're antagonistic toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the godly persons glorify the Lord. And kasmachchate na nameva. Why shouldn't the godly persons glorify Krishna? For that matter, why shouldn't the demons? They also should. But because they're miscreants. Namam duskritinamuta prapajante naratama. Maya pratagana asura paramashrita. Because they're miscreants, they avoid surrendering to Krishna. Instead, they'll cultivate mundane knowledge and boast that they're controlling nature, taming nature. And nature is not very tame. Nature kills them all. Just like sometimes we hear that a lion has been tamed, but then he bites off the head of the so-called lion tamer. After all, it's still a lion. So the demons may decry the personality of Godhead, but the Lord is always in the all-powerful position. Kasmach chatena nameran mahatman. Krishna is the most glorious. He's the most broad-minded. Mahatma also means broad-minded. He's so broad-minded that he gives liberation even to the demons that he kills. Putana Rakshasi. The prayer was offered that why should I, how can I surrender to someone more merciful than Krishna, who is so kind that he even gave liberation to the Putana Rakshasi, thinking, well, she's approached me like a mother, I have to reciprocate. So Krishna is very kind. Kasmachchate, the very broad-minded Mahatma, most broad-minded. Or he's the greatest Atma. We're the tiny Atma. And he's the supreme Atma, Paramatma. We're, we're very small. Anu. And Krishna's the greatest Vipu. Gaudiyase Brahmano Pyadikartre. The Brahma is supposed to be the creator, we read sometimes. And in Hinduism, they have three gods, the creator, the destroyer, and the maintainer. Brahma is the creator, Shiva is the destroyer, and Vishnu is the maintainer. But here, Adikartra, you're the original creator also. You may be the maintainer, but you're also the creator, you're also the destroyer. You're everything. You're the Brahma, when he creates under your direction. And when Lord Shiva destroys, he also does it under your direction. And maintenance you do yourself. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that when you build a house, you call a contractor. And if you want to destroy a building, again you call a contractor. But maintaining it, you do yourself. So the personality of Godhead subcontracts the work of creation and destruction, and maintenance he himself oversees. Adikartre. So every one of us can claim to be a doer. We all do something, we all create something. And the supreme creator in the universe is Lord Brahma. But the original creator is Lord Vishnu. And Krishna is the original Vishnu. Adikarta. He is the original creator of everything. Brahma. The work of Brahma is called Visarga. Atrasarga Visargascha. Sarga means the original creation, in which the Lord creates the elements of the cosmic manifestation, the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation. Then Visarga, sub-creation, is Brahma's job. He takes those ingredients and arranges them according to the Lord's direction. So he's, again, a subcontractor. He's doing the work of sub-creation by the direction of the Lord. The Lord also is giving the plan. You hire a contractor, you provide the ingredients, you provide the plan. And the contractor does his work. So Lord Brahma, Adikaviye, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikaviye, the Lord implanted within Brahma the plans, how to do everything, how to create the universe as it was before. Brahma doesn't create anything new. He recreates the universe as it was under the direction of Lord Vishnu. So Krishna is the original creator. There are so many creators in this world, but they're all created by someone. And the original creator is Krishna. Ananta Devesha Jagannivasa. He has no beginning and no end. Ananta. Anta means having an end. And Ananta, endless. The Lord is unlimited. Ananta Devesha. And he's the controller of all the devas. Deva Deva Jagatpate. He's the deva of the devas. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Sadapa Shanti Sudaya. All the demigods are looking toward the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This is the statement of the Rig Veda. Deva Isha. The devas are not independent. They're also under control. Ishara Padama Krishna. Everyone's a controller to some extent. We think we're controllers, but we're controlled by the devas. You can't move your eyelid. You can't move your eyebrow without the sanction of the particular controller for that department. Every part of the body is controlled by a particular demigod. Even if you think about it, it's not even difficult to understand. Your eyes, let's say. We can't independently use our eyes. First of all, we say my eyes, but you get some speck in your eye or you get some disease in the eye. And then you can say my eye, but it's not under your control. There's so many diseases that can afflict the eye and can't do anything. So first of all, you have to have eyes. I was in some office one time of a devotee who's a doctor, and he happened to have, you know, there's always a professional magazine, medical things. He was involved in emergency medicine, and the particular issue of their magazine illustrated in brilliant color all the traumas that could take place to the eye, all the various emergencies that could afflict the eye, and he filled the whole magazine. So the eye is very delicate, actually. So we're dependent, first of all, on that little organ, the eye. And then we're dependent on, there has to be something to see. Otherwise the eye is useless. And there has to be light. If the lights are all off, completely off, you can have very good eyes, 20/20 vision, and you'll be totally blind. Because we're dependent on the light. Sunlight or artificial light. And the light is finally coming from the sun. So without the sun, the eye is useless. In charge of the sun is the sun god. So without the sun god, our vision is of no use. Our eyes are of no use. So we're not in control. And the same thing goes for the ears. You have very good ears, but if there's nothing to hear, then that's useless. If there's no air to, no, as they say, ether to convey the sound, then useless again. Or if the organ goes bad, useless. Same thing for all of the different senses and all the parts of the body. They're all under superior control. I say my hand, but at any time it could be, control could be, I could be deprived of control of the hand. And I say it's my hand, but it won't function. So we're all dependent on the devas, the various demigods who are in charge of things, and they're dependent on Krishna. They're controlled by Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is Deva Isha, the controller even of the devas. And Jagannivasa. Nivas means, well, we typically means house. Agarwal Nivas. Abode. There may be Agarwal Nivas, or this Nivas, that Nivas, but there's Jagan Nivas. Krishna is the resting place, the home, the abode for the entire universe. Jagan Nivas. The entire universe lives within the personality of Godhead. It's all dependent on the personality of Godhead. The universe is manifest from the lotus flower that grows from the navel of Mahavishnu. And it consists of nothing other than the energy of the personality of Godhead. There's no place else for the energy, for the universe to live, because the Lord is everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. He's everything, he's everywhere. There's nothing outside of the energy of the Lord. So there's no place for the universe to live except within the personality of Godhead. And not only one universe, but millions of universes, each with its own Brahma, each with its own Indra, each with its own Durga, each within so many devas. But the entire universe is living within the personality of Godhead. Ekam Chainasthito Jagat, the whole cosmic manifestation is resting on only one fraction of his energy. So he's known as Jagan Nivas, the resting place of the whole universe.
Ananta Devesha Jagannivasa Tvad Akshuram.
And he's inexhaustible. We're all, the resources of the material world are exhaustible. We have all these ecological crises now because petrol is going to run out, because firewood is scarce, because water is now the big commodity that companies and governments need to fight over. Water, petrol, wood, food grains, they're all exhaustible. There's a certain stock, and when the stock is used up, then you're in trouble. But the Lord is inexhaustible. there's no limit to the energy of the Lord. Something like the sun has been there for so long and it doesn't diminish. But even the sun diminishes. But Krishna is absolutely inexhaustible. Akshuram.
Twada akshuram sadasat tat param yat.
And transcendental to sadasat. Sadasat can mean good and bad. Sadasat can mean manifest and not manifest. It can mean different things. But here Srila Prabhupada gives cause and effect. Cause and effect. The entire material creation is running on cause and effect. Everything, each cause is the effect of a previous cause. And all of the causes and effects are going on in that way. But Krishna is Sarvakarana Karana. He is the cause of all causes, and he's beyond cause and effect. We're all bound by the influence of cause and effect. We do something and then we get the result. But Krishna is beyond all that. He's not within the laws of material nature. Sadasatta param. Tamna svena sada nirasta kuvakam satyam param dhimahi. Krishna is transcendental to everything. We're also meant to be transcendental to everything. And therefore we're meant to go home back to Godhead. All right, stop here and take some questions. Send it back out again. I've heard that Krishna runs after the sleeping living entities, trying to make them come back to his abode. But if Krishna has all renunciation, why does he appear to be attached to waking up the living entities in the material world? One thing is that this is spiritual attachment. There's attachment in the spiritual world also. Vishodamani is attached to Krishna, Krishna is attached to Vishodamani. The attachment is there, but it's transcendental. It's not on the platform of this body. We speak of attachment, we mean material attachment. Like if we say, if someone's very attached to chanting Hare Krishna, we don't say, oh, you're so attached. By attachment, we usually mean material attachment. Someone's attached to his property, someone's very attached to his wife, someone's attached to... Let me say, oh, you're so attached. But if someone's attached to Krishna, that means detached from matter. So Krishna's attachment is spiritual. He has no attachment for this material world. But he's spiritually attached to the living beings. Yes. From another point of view, Krishna doesn't need the living entities, but the living entities need Krishna. Therefore, it's for their benefit. It's not that Krishna is lacking servitors or lacking devotees with whom to exchange transcendental love, but it's for our benefit. If Krishna is the taste of all liquids, then that implies that he's also the taste of alcohol and wine. Is it then possible to consume alcohol and remember Krishna as the taste? Yes. Prabhupada said, I can make even the drunkards Krishna conscious. Rasoham absukanti. I am the taste of the liquid. So while you're in your tavern drinking, then you should think that the taste of this wine is Krishna. And gradually you become Krishna conscious. Then you'll give up wine.
In the purport, Krishna is referred to as he. Does this imply that Krishna is male? Shouldn't Krishna be both male and female? So why don't we refer to Krishna as both instead of he? Yes, that he is he implies that Krishna is male. Govindam Adi Purusham. Purusha means male. Shouldn't Krishna be both male and female? Should means what? Some laws there? Just like we say you should go to college. That means there's some sort of principle that you have to follow. If you want to get ahead in life, you should go to college. Or we say you should cross a green light. That means there's some law that you should follow. Shouldn't Krishna be male? Why? To keep up with current ideas of what's politically correct. Why should Krishna be both male and female? To turn it around. Shouldn't Krishna be both male and female? No, why should he be both male and female? Why shouldn't he be one or the other? Krishna's Purusha, he's male. Male means the predominator. He's the predominator of everything. It's like approaching a king and saying, Your Majesty, shouldn't you be both king and queen? He's the male. He's the supreme male. Original male. Adi Purusha. Male and female, what? Hermaphrodite? He's the original male. And female is also there. His energy. Predominator and predominated. The male is predominant, the female is predominated. So the energy is predominated by the Lord. He's the controller of all energies. So Srimati Radharani is there, the original female. And Krishna is there as the original male. So in that way you get everything. But it's not that we have to merge and make Krishna male and female both. That now it's become almost de rigueur that you have to write he or she, he or she, he or she, he or she. But for Krishna there's no such restriction that you have to be he or she, he or she, he or she. He's male. That is exactly you've got it right. That is exactly why he's referred to as he, because he's male. And in relationship to Krishna, everyone is female. The so-called Purushas of this material world, so-called male, they're also female. Of course, some of them are confused. They can't figure out materially whether they're male or female. And females are similar. The material world is so confused, people can't even figure out materially what they are. But spiritually, everyone is female. Prakriti. Binna prakriti rashtadapareya mitasthanya prakriti vidhi mepara. There, the material energy is the prakriti, the energy of the Lord, and the living entities are also the energy of the Lord. Energy means predominated, so all the living beings are female. Externally, according to the body, they may be designated as male or female, but spiritually, everyone is female. We're trying to have equality between male and female, but both male and female are trying to actually be in the superior position. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, it's all about me. The man wants to be taught and say, I have it my way, I'm the man. So he wants to be the controller. And the woman in a different way, you don't care about me. What about me? Don't you love me? Or one way or another. Both parties want it to be all about me. They want to be the center of everything. They want to be the enjoyer. They want to control. The man wants to control the woman one way,
and the woman wants to control the man a different way.
Each wants to control and exploit the other for their own enjoyment. And this gets all printed up as love and so on. But it's all about my enjoyment. Therefore, amidst all this love, you have half the world divorcing. Because me isn't satisfied. Everyone wants to be the enjoyer, everyone wants to be the controller, and everyone's an illusion because the only real enjoyer is Krishna. The only real controller is Krishna. And we're all meant to be controlled and give enjoyment to Krishna. So from that point of view, everyone is female. And Krishna is the only man. So that way you get equality. We're all female. The only non-equality is we're not equal to Krishna. Does our strong identification with our bodies make us these bodies in our conditioned stage? I heard that we are only spiritual when we get liberated from the bodily concept of life. Please explain. No, it doesn't make us these bodies. But it makes us think we're these bodies and act as if we're these bodies and practically lose the distinction. Just like I identify myself so much with South Africa that when the South African soccer team wins, I say, "We won!" I wasn't on the team. How did I win anything? But I identify myself as South African, and therefore when South Africa wins a soccer match, I think, "We won." Or it went the other way, we lost. Because I identify myself with South Africa. In so many other ways, we identify ourselves with something so... well, even you watch a movie, and when the hero or the heroine is in distress, you begin to cry. You watch some tragedy and you begin to cry. Why? A batch of lights are playing in different patterns on a screen. What is that to cry about? But you identify yourself with the character. And so now when the character is under threat, your pulse starts to go faster. When the character does in the bad guys, then you get a big rush. If the character is, whatever happens to him, it's practically happening to you because you identify yourself with that character. Now it's video games, you know, somebody's deep in a video game and he's wearing army fatigues and he's got a huge gun and he's shooting all the terrorists or aliens or whatever they might be. And while he's absorbed in this game, it's practically he is whatever character he is in the game. He doesn't even eat anymore because he's so absorbed in killing terrorists or defending the world against aliens. But it has nothing to do with him. It has nothing to do with him. A batch of ones and zeros in a computer program. But he identifies himself with those things so much that the difference just gets lost. The difference gets lost. There's some money in the bank. It's in the bank. What does it have to do with me? But I identify this as my money. So I identify myself so much with this body that it's as if I'm this body. Sometimes Prabhupada says that at the present moment we're a combination of matter and spirit. We're not, but the spirit is inside the matter, and and identifying with the matter so intensely that it becomes conditioned by the conditions affecting the matter. So I think I'm getting old, I'm dying, or I think I'm fat, I'm thin. I'm not fat, I'm not thin, I'm not old, I'm not young. But I identify myself as these things because I identify myself with this body. And therefore I'm in so much distress because of the bodily situation, or so much happiness because of the bodily situation. And it's always changing. So I'm not this body. The Bhagavad Gita gives the example that, it gives several examples. The moon is racing across the sky. Have you sometimes seen that? The moon is racing across the sky. Actually, it's not racing across the sky, but because the clouds are moving, and you identify the clouds with the moon, it appears to be moving. Or you look in the water, and you see the moon shaking. The moon is not shaking, but because the moon is identified with the water, it appears that the moon is shaking. Actually, the moon is beyond the water. Now, in the same way, we're beyond this body, but we identify ourselves with this body. And so when the body is changing in some way, we think the change is happening to us. Someone bumps into our car and we say, "You hit me." It's not me. But I identify myself with the car. I say, "You hit me." So we're not this body. And we're, you can say, we're only spirit soul when we get liberated from the bodily concept of life. Means we only act as spirit soul. We only come to our real identity as spirit soul when we get free from the bodily concept of life. You know, I can't be who I really am as long as I'm thinking I'm Napoleon. I can't act as what I really am. I can't be a sane human being as long as I'm imagining that actually I'm Napoleon Bonaparte. Move forward, the troops! As long as I'm in illusion like that, I can't be who I really am. But as long as I'm thinking I'm this body, I can't actually understand my identity as spirit, soul, and act in that identity. So chanting Hare Krishna cleanses the mind, purifies the mind. We get free from this bodily concept of life and come to our real life. If Krishna is the knower of everything, then why did he have to come as Lord Chaitanya to understand Radharani's feelings of love for him? That's how he understood. Krishna understands everything. He has his ways of understanding. That's how he understood that topic. As long as he's in the position of Krishna, he can't understand what it is that's so attractive about himself. So he takes the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he can understand. We have limited ways of understanding. We understand by speculation, we understand by inspection, we understand by the newspapers, we understand by instruments like telescopes and microscopes, but our understanding is limited. We have lots of different ways that we can employ, but they're all limited strategies, limited approaches. Krishna also has unlimited ways to understand. Or he has many ways to understand, but they're unlimited. And he can understand everything. Next batch, okay. Who, what created Krishna? Nothing created Krishna. Krishna is not created. You're also not created. Najayate, Mriyate, Vakadacha. There are two kinds of entities in existence. The ones that are created and the ones that are not created. Chairs are created. Planets are created, bodies are created, The souls are not created, they exist permanently. They're always existing. They have no beginning, they have no end. And Krishna is also in that category. He has no beginning, he has no end. The only difference is that we're small, eternal souls, and Krishna is the supreme eternal soul. But neither Krishna nor we are ever created. We exist eternally. But Krishna is the whole and we're the parts. It's like the sun. As long as the sun is existing, the sunshine is existing. So as long as Krishna is existing, we're existing. But Krishna is the whole and we're part. Where Krishna is the origin and we're the emanation. How do we direct everything we do to Krishna under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master? Spiritual master teaches us how to direct everything toward Krishna. His job is to find the ways and means to engage the disciple in the service of Krishna. How does one keep a balance between spiritual and material lives, as material things can take up lots of one's time? One keeps the balance by giving more attention to the spiritual side. Material side automatically gets more than its share of attention. So if we want to have balance, then we have to deliberately give attention to the spiritual side. This is the material world. The balance will always go toward matter. So if we want to have balance, we have to give more attention to the spiritual side. Material side is not practically automatically it's gone. Spiritual side needs deliberate attention. What other services can we offer to Lord Krishna other than distributing books and helping devotees in the mandir? Why do you want to have another service other than distributing books? But if you're looking for other services, you can help in distributing books. You can distribute books. You can help the devotees who are distributing books. You can sponsor distribution of books. You can help with the logistics of distributing books. You can make propaganda for the distribution of the books. You can get on Facebook and talk the books up. There's thousands of ways that you can assist in this central work of distributing books. Prabhupada used to quote an old motto from Indian railways, keep the wheels turning. There are so many, Indian railways I think is the biggest employer in the world. Yeah. But it's not all engineers. It has so many people employed in the railways, from the conductors, the ticket takers, the guys who hit the wheels at the train stops and do something or other, testing something or testing this or that, the guys who lay the tracks, the guys who come around selling chai, all of the different people who are engaged, the sweepers, the people who are building the stations, the people who are programming the computers, and so many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs, all aimed at getting a train from one place to another with people and goods on it. It's a simple thing. Just move the goods or move the people from point A to point B. But within that, there's so many different departments of work. So our mission is to distribute this literature all over the world, and there's so many ways that you can take part in that. After the literature is distributed, then people take an interest, then what are they going to do? Somebody has to be there to guide them further, to further cultivate their interest and give them direction. So many millions of different things. The book distributors need encouragement. They need to come back to a beautiful temple and see the deities and get inspiration. Prasadam needs to be provided. There's no limit. So if you just take this one central mission of book distribution, so many things to do. Apart from that, book distribution isn't the only service. There are so many others. Krishna is unlimited, so there's unlimited service for Krishna. Why should we chant 16 rounds specifically? Because in the beginning, we're not accustomed to chanting more. 16 is a minimum. Of course, why 16? It's arbitrary. Why not 14 or 17? But it's like the doctor says that I want you to do 12 push-ups a day. Why not 11? Why not 13? But it's arbitrary. He says 12. And if you say, all right, 12, then you're doing good. If that's your physical therapy. I do 12 push-ups, I do 5 of this, I do 7 of that. You can make your own rules and say, well, it's not so important, I'm just going to do 4 of these. But if you do 12, then you'll get the effect. If you do 4, you'll get your whatever you get from 4. And if he says minimum 12 and you do 20, well, great. So why are we doing it? We're doing it because the spiritual master has prescribed. And do this much and you'll be in a good position. And we're not the doctors, we're the patients. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Lord Nityananda is regarded as Lord Chaitanya's elder brother, but was not born to Mother Sachi. Is there a reason for this? We have so many relationships like that. Someone's like an elder brother, but not by birth. There's so many relationships like that. It doesn't have to be by birth only. That's such a limited conception. By relationship. Or someone's like a father. Someone he was like a father to me. May not have been by birth, but by relationship. So the relationship is there. Can you explain the difference between the original Krishna and the original Vishnu and the need for this? Why is there any distinction made? How did the misconception that Vishnu is supreme start, and how can it be better understood? Vishnu is supreme, that's all right. Advaita Machuta Manadi Vananta Rupa. Krishna is one, and he has millions of forms. So Vishnu is also Krishna. Krishna is also Vishnu. Nrisimhadeva is also Krishna. Nrisimhadeva is also Vishnu. And from our point of view, we see that there are so many different personalities of Godhead. But they're all the same personality of Godhead, appearing in different roles. Vishnu is also Krishna. He's not a different person. He's Krishna. But performing a certain role for creation. Similarly, all of the different forms of Krishna. They're all Krishna. So throughout Om Tat Vishnu Paramahantam, therefore Vishnu is glorified as the Supreme. Then if you dig deeper into Vishnu Tattva, then there are distinctions that can be made. That Krishna has qualities that no other form of Vishnu has. That distinguishes it. And the acharyas have analyzed that all of the other forms, ete cham sakala pumsa krishna stu bhagavan, All the other manifestations of Vishnu are partial manifestations. But Krishna is the complete manifestation of Godhead. Krishna Subhavan is one. But Kaviraj says there's no harm if you say that Vishnu is supreme or Krishna is supreme. It doesn't have to be an argument about that. Some call him Vishnu, some call him Nisringadeva, some call him Ram, some call him Krishna. He's the same personality of God. How do we lift up ourselves up if we are fallen devotees? Rupa Goswami says that you lift yourself up by devotional service. In the material world, you have to lift yourself up by some penance or some ritual or some something. But in the spiritual platform, there's nothing higher than devotional service. There's penances or rituals are not higher than devotional service. Devotional service is the most purifying thing. So if someone falls down on devotional service, he should pick himself up by devotional service. The example is given, if you fall on the ground, how do you pick yourself up? You push against the ground, right? So if we fall in devotional service, we should pick ourselves up by devotional service. Can you please speak a little on the importance and significance of Ekadashi? Why do we observe it? It's mentioned in Shastra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked that we observe it, and it's good for us. The real purpose of observing Ekadashi is to become more Krishna conscious. It's not for getting punya, pious credit, or some other purpose. It's for advancing in devotional service. It's like a sail. Why do stores hold sails? Just to increase the number of customers or to increase your buying, they hold a sale. 50% off, then everybody goes to the store. But actually, those who are already customers, they'll keep going to the store anyway. But when they hold a sale, it's encouragement. Yeah, I should go. So Kadasi is encouraging us. More devotional service. What does it mean to be part of ISKCON? As individuals in the material world, our dealings with people can reflect either poorly or positively on ISKCON. Is there a benchmark for us to follow? That's a good question. You should send this to Mayapur and let the GBC discuss it. International Society for Krishna Conscious. So we should be Krishna conscious. To be part of ISKCON means to be Krishna conscious. And if you're Krishna conscious, that will reflect well on ISKCON. If you're not Krishna conscious, it won't reflect very well. As devotees, what's our duty to humanity? Meaning service outside the movement. Our service to those outside the movement is to bring them inside the movement. The movement means the movement of those who are interested in serving Krishna. Those who are outside that movement are in Maya, and that's not good for them or for anyone. And our service is to bring them back to Krishna consciousness. All their other problems are due to being in Maya. Their food problem, their mental problem, their political problem, their social problem, their financial problem, their health problem, their million and one other problems are all due to one problem. They've forgotten their eternal relationship with Krishna, and therefore they're rotting in this material world. So we have, our service is to say to them, you're in the wrong place, you should get out, and here's how you do it. That's the best service that anyone can do for humanity. Social welfare workers are also subject to the same problems of material existence, of birth, death, disease, and old age. So they need be uplifted also by Krishna consciousness movement. What is the difference between a grihastha and a grihamedi? What is a measurable way to test this? A grihastha is a person who's living for the service of Krishna in family life, and a grihamedi is a person who's living in family life for sense gratification, especially for sex enjoyment. Measure is how one is becoming detached from material enjoyment and attached to the service of Krishna. The more he's attached to Krishna, then the better his situation. How do I know if the emotions I'm feeling during kirtan is from the spiritual potency or the material arrangements, composition, melody, etc.? Don't worry about it, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Imagine you're chanting Hare Krishna and you're just, well, am I feeling happy because of the holy name or is it the arrangements? So just forget it, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Okay? All right, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.